This is Jeff.
This is Brandon.
We're the Film Blurs. This episode is brought to you by
Puma presents the new AC Milan third kit for the 2021-22 season. The bold new progressive jersey takes traditional design and rewrites the rules to push the boundaries and defy convention. The new AC Milan third kit creates a fearless new expression of the club's identity and challenges tradition by reimagining conventional football kits in a brand new approach that merges football and streetwear culture. Puma, we are forever faster. Puma.com.
This is Kevin.
And this is Ron.
From the Your Valuable Home Podcast.
And you are listening to
The Film Blurs
on the new Pod City Podcast Network.
Get your films on with the Blurs.
Once an idea has taken hold of the brain, it's almost impossible to eradicate.
Unpacking movies has never been more spot on, woke, fire, and just plain lit.
They are lit all the time.
So if you're unsure whether or not to plop down some cash for a film, check out the Blurs.
When a man with a .45 meets a man with a rifle, the man with a pistol is a dead man.
Rondo's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
You really only need to hang, mean bastard. But mean bastards, you need to hang.
Don't say you weren't warned. Ridiculous. Here's Brandon and Jeff.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Film Blurs. We are doing a short episode because, like we said earlier, we are trying to do things for you.
Those big things, baby.
So we got a screening to go to, and you'll find out about it next week. I am Brandon Norwood, a.k.a. Hero Protagonist, a.k.a. the true father of Joe's kids. I got Joe's licking my shoes clean with his tongue.
With the tongue?
Yeah. I was like, I don't care you get ringworms. I want these clean and shiny. And then after you finish licking them, you got to wipe them down again with a Clorox wipe.
Right. Because like the saliva would break down the rubber, right? Yeah, I would think
so. So I make him clean them twice.
Yeah. Well, you got to earn that money.
Oh, I'm not paying him.
Well, I mean, can't he see his kids every time he does that? Right.
So well, that's why he's at the house, right? To see his kids while he works.
So that's the room and board.
All right, so I mean, he don't live with me. I don't know where the fuck he lives. My girl would leave. She straight up say, "Oh, we're divorced."
I live in a van down by the river.
That's where he lives.
AKA Poppy Chulo. I'm still sticking Molly and all the women in your life's butt. I'm still getting your grandma pregnant. Still spanking your daughter and your grand and your wife and eating all your Jello. And I'm making you lick my chicletas clean. How does that feel?
Jello, the Jello, son. You taking the Jello? Taking the Jello out of motherfuckers' mouths, man. You just villainous.
AKA
the Lethal Protector.
I'll never get bored of that. Never.
AKA Ruff McGruff, still pulling ripping runs. Abolished Dare. AKA B Wood, the Magnificent.
And I am Jeff Stewart, AKA Uncle Jeffrey, AKA He Who Remains, AKA Revengeman Button, AKA TBD. Welcome, all of us. Yay.
All right, let's get into something that broke yesterday that had me dying for 20 minutes.
I had so much fun on Photoshop doing fucking with this thing.
Oh, well, we got to throw that up on the Insta and the TikTok profiles and the Twitter, all of our socials, except for Facebook, because, you know, who gives a shit about Facebook?
Correct.
Anyways, me and Jeff, we've been bullying Vin Diesel a lot on this show. And kids, I don't condone bullying, but sometimes it's good because now Vin Diesel went on Instagram and wrote a whole open letter begging, not asking, begging the Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Mr. Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Please come back for Fast and Furious 10 and 11.
Now, it wasn't so much of a please. It was the most Vin Diesel apology that I've ever... It is the most bro apology that I've ever heard. Hobbs can't be played by no other. I hope you rise to the occasion and fulfill your destiny. Like, fucking fulfill your destiny? This is Mr. Dwayne The Rock Johnson. You gotta say the mister.
Yo,
put some respect on his motherfucking name.
Man, I wish I was running Universal Studios. You know why? Because I would have him get on his hands and knees, kiss Dwayne's feet, and beg him. And then once that done, I'd be like, yo, Rock, do it to him. And The Rock would whip out his nuts and teabag Vin Diesel.
That's a bit much. I just want The Rock to bring the people's elbow out of retirement and call him a candy ass. I want him to ask him, can he smell what he's cooking? And I want him to say, it doesn't matter what your name is. I want all the rock hits from WWE.
Listen, a lesson needs to be learned here. And Vin Diesel needs to learn a lesson. So I think a good tea bag right on the forehead.
If The Rock wants to bless Vin Diesel's forehead with his magnificent sack, then go forth, you brown soldier. You teabag this motherfucker, and you give us another Hobbs and Shaw movie.
And then I'd pull a Tropic Thunder where I'd be like, first AD, punch Vin Diesel in the face. Look, this shit will never not be funny.
I love that fucking movie. And I've said this a million times. If Heath Ledger hadn't died, Robert Downey Jr. would have won the Oscar for that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise should have won, honestly.
I mean, Tom Cruise could have been nominated. I want to see that Les Grossman movie.
Yeah, that got canceled. Yeah. Like, yo, Paramount, right? That's why they pivot to streaming.
Right, because, like, that Les Grossman movie.
That would have been, oh, man, that would have made money.
Did someone say my name?
Hi, baby Tom Cruise.
I enjoyed Tropic Thunder because I got to play a bad guy, and I was mean, and they put me in a fat suit, and I did all my stunts. I did all the dancing myself.
Don't worry, Tom. Listen, mm-hmm. The heat might be on right now because of the whole tragedy that happened a few weeks ago, but don't worry. I'm going to get your ass.
You got to catch me first.
Yeah, so we chose violence today. Look, I respect somewhat Vin Diesel. Like, when he's good, he's good.
Right.
The thing is, he's gotten in his own way.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Thinking that he was bigger than this thing. Bigger than like he was or whatever like that, because honestly the Fast and the Furious saga is the only thing that he's done that's been like wildly successful. Like all these other franchises he's done have failed miserably, even Riddick, which I love.
I can't, and that's what I wanted to bring up, because we keep forgetting to talk about this. He put it on his Instagram, they're making another one, which how the fuck did he get this greenlit?
Right. But like, I love the Riddick saga. I love Vin Diesel, the actor. I just am not a big fan of Vin Diesel, the person.
Yeah.
The profession, the businessman or the professional. Like, he should have just like been the great godfather of this Fast and the Furious saga, get all this money and just sit back.
Well, Hobbs and Shaw proved that this is obviously going to live on beyond him. Like, all the spinoffs they have planned, I'm just like, well, dude, you did it to yourself.
Right, just collect the money, dude. Just collect the fucking money. You're executive producer on every fucking thing. You're going to get it paid.
Yeah.
Like, he needs to go back to indies. We'll put him in indie jail. Have him do some indies like he started out.
Yeah, I can't believe he thinks he's that great of an actor where he could start pushing fucking Vin around. The Rock. Or he's like, I'm a great producer. I'm a great actor. I need to get the best from you. Shut the fuck up.
The Rock don't know nothing but the best.
Also, this is fucking Fast and Furious. You're not making...
You send a Fiero into space. Calm down.
Yeah, you're not making Doom. You're not Denny. You know what I mean?
Right. But like, good for Vin Diesel for taking a knee and kissing the ring the way only Vin Diesel can kiss the ring.
Somebody had to sun him. This is the only way this happened. In private, somebody sunned him real bad.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot wait till that story leaks out about who sunned him to spur this apology.
Right. Because this is about to be the non-feud of a century. The Rock versus Vin Diesel. The feud no one cared about. It was about to be epic. And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, you know, destiny, man. Bro. Family. Family, bro.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I want to talk about this new TikTok challenge that I invented.
Okay.
for all of you out there, I've invented a new TikTok challenge. All right. Or you could do it on Instagram or whatever like that. It's for, movie watchers. It's called when you're out in public, shut the fuck up and watch the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Quiet Place too. Having flashbacks.
Shut the fuck up and watch the movie. I just had to get that off my chest. I went to see Eternals and these feral teenagers were next to me and they were just like through the entire fucking movie. Like I didn't pay they didn't pay $20 each to watch this motherfucker.
Where did you see it and what time?
The Chamonix.
What time?
8 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah.
I fucking hate children.
That's why I make sure to go to the first showtime of the day.
I hate them for making me an old man. But anyway, yeah, this is a new TikTok challenge. I want all of you out there in the Film Blurreds Nation to, when you go to a movie, I want you to just shut the fuck up and watch the goddamn movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That goes without saying.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess we won't have to be dealing with that much anymore because we're steadily getting.
Oh, yeah. No, but I like to be around the common folk sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I still believe in movie magic, man. I still love the theater. The movie theater is my church.
Man, this past weekend going to the new Draft House location in downtown Manhattan and then going to the real IMAX at 68th and Broadway. I mean, those two are always the best behaved audiences. One, because that IMAX is fucking expensive, so people like will fuck you up.
Right.
And two, Draft House, they'll fucking kick you out.
Right, that's a policy. Yeah. Like it's like, yo, you get one. Yeah. Like you get one warning.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways,
moving along.
Let's get on to a poster that I dropped last night.
And I just saw it just right now. I'm looking at it.
It is your standard Spider-Man. It's the first, I can't believe this is the first poster that they dropped for this movie. Since the trailer dropped almost 2 months ago now.
Because they don't need to sell this thing. It sells itself.
It is your standard Photoshop job.
And it's honestly, boring as shit.
I looked at it and I didn't think much of it until I went on Twitter and it started trending. I'm like, why the fuck is this trending? You people need to get some lives because goddamn, do you find every little nook and cranny in these things?
All right. So I'm looking at it right now. I see the Green Goblin.
That's it. Somebody zoomed in super close and that's our first actual look at the Green Goblin, which is fucking pathetic.
Like someone zoomed in and like you can obviously tell it's the Green Goblin.
See, I wasn't looking that hard because I saw it. I was just like, sure.
Well, the only reason I looked that hard is just because everybody was making a stink about it, right? So like, right. I'm only looking at like I see the green. I'm sure there's Easter eggs all over this fucking thing. I see the Green Goblin. I see Doc Ock's tentacles. I see some shit that could be some other shit, or it could just be just random Photoshop garbage. Like it's a boring poster.
Yes, it is. Tom Holland posted that poster to his Instagram last night saying this movie will blow your minds. And I'm just like,
Okay, Tom Holland.
We'll see. I know Tom Holland's been going around. Tom Holland and John Watts, the director, they've both been going around calling this Spider-Man Endgame. And I know the rumored runtime is 2.5.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah, I'm not excited anymore for these Marvel joints.
Right. I mean, yeah, we'll talk about that later in our main review, but it's a poster. It's got Spider-Man on it. He's got the Iron Spider suit on. It looks like he's about to throw down. I don't see Doctor Strange in here anywhere.
Yeah, so
I see some sparks. There's a lot of sparks and some thunder. That's cool. I like the sparks and thunder.
I mean, that's all.
Yeah, it's fucking fine.
I know people clamoring for another trailer, which I'm like, why? Why? You got everything you need out of that first one.
Right, like, don't ruin this movie. Like, as disappointed as I am in the Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 4, I want to go into this as clean as possible.
Yeah, that first trailer was more than enough. It's a 3-minute fucking trailer.
Right. Like, I'm going to let Raimi do Raimi, and I'm going to go in and be surprised.
Oh, no, this is John Watts.
Wait, I thought Raimi. No, that's right. Raimi's doing Doctor Strange. I'm thinking because Doctor Strange is in this and shit like that. Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm glad we have a break. I'm glad after Spider-Man, we're not getting anything till May 6th.
Until they get their shit together.
Like, all right. So let's move on. Robert Downey Jr., Matt Damon, and Emily Blunt have joined the cast of Oppenheimer. why I guess Nolan's racking up an all-star cast. He's trying to, it seems like he's trying to get that Oscar now.
Okay, well, as long as people can hear it
and understand it.
Yeah, so I mean,
you know what I mean? Don't try to outsmart me in a fucking biopic.
Right? Right? I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Dude invented the atomic bomb, felt guilty about it. The end. Like, I don't try to fucking twisty turn me.
I wonder what this movie's going to be because it's being shot on IMAX film and it has an $100 million budget. And I'm like, is this an action film or is this a biopic?
Right. All I know, it better have the greatest atomic bomb blast footage outside of actual atomic bomb footage. Like, the VFX have to be top tier.
Well, people who lived through Dunkirk saw the movie and they're like, the movie was louder than the actual event. So
I was talking to my friend, sound guy, Mike, about Dunkirk, actually. And he says, it made him physically ill how loud it was.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
And he's a sound designer.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, it almost made me want to throw up.
That's Nolan, man. You turn everything up except for when they're talking.
Right. Fuck dialogue.
You know, even though your fucking whole, the plots of all your movies hinge on the dialogue, so.
Right. So.
All right. All right. We'd like to give, go ahead.
You want me to do it or you want to do it?
You do it.
All right. So, we have a super fan, Maria. She is constantly schooling us on Dune, more me than Brandon. And she has written us some very extensive emails in regards to not only the Dune movies, but the book series and like the deeper meanings of it. And so we really do appreciate that. We appreciate our fans. We appreciate Maria for just, you know, trying to up our game when it comes to this stuff. I am putting this out to Maria. We would like you to be our resident Dune expert. So, Maria, I need you to, find us on social media, send us an email, whatever like that.
Everything's at Film Blurbs.
At Film Blurbs. And give us your contact information. We want to have you on the show in the next couple of weeks, the next 2 weeks. You know, we'll give you 5 minutes. And we want to have your review of the Dune movie. We want to hop on a call with you because we love you.
All right.
All right. There you go.
To piggyback off that, our last bit of news, Mary Parent did a Q&A. She's the producer on Dune Part 1, and she'll be a producer on Dune Part 2. She let it slip at this Q&A that Dune Part 2 will start rolling July 18th. Denny just last week said, I'm not going to be ready to start shooting till fall. So
it's a disconnect there. Disconnect.
And remember, Denny don't have final say in anything on this. He's basically he gets to do what he wants as a passenger.
Right.
Because Dune is still a Denny Villeneuve movie through and through. But again,
he doesn't have that Nolan clout yet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like after this, he'll have that Nolan clout.
Yeah.
Like he'll get final cut and everything like that. But he's still got to play the game for the second one.
Ooh, boy. I feel bad because now, like, he has...
The pressure's on. The pressure was on before.
Yeah, now...
But now the pressure's, like, really on.
Because he has to be finished pre-production by, like, March, April.
Right, right. Yeah.
That is crunch time.
Right. And I know he's probably been holding some stuff back, some information back.
Obviously.
He's probably been, like... He's probably been working... Right, diligently now,
right.
But like, I mean, you want to pack you want to give yourself some time, you know. Like he very well could be ready by that summer deadline, and that could have been his target, but he's not going to tell them that.
My other thing too is he still has to play the game because they're still doing all these guild and press screenings because you know they want this to be an awards player, so they're still. They still got to play the game. Like, they still got to fly to every city and promote this shit still. It's not... I get it. You guys don't understand. This is why a lot of people hate award season, because even when your movie's out, you're still promoting it because you have to have this long awards run till the Academy Awards.
Right, right.
Like, Nolan was doing Q&As for Dunkirk up until February that year. Think about that. That movie came out in July.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, this is... It's
the name of the game.
It's sort of like whatever sport you adhere to. I don't do sports, but I'm guessing it's sort of like the playoffs.
Yeah.
Until you get to the World Series.
Yeah, that's why. That's why whenever I make a movie, I'm gonna tell the studio, don't put me in awards contention. Because, but I will tell you what, after the first 2 weeks of the awards tour, I'll be like, fuck this. Like every time you ask me a question, I'm like, I don't care. I'm tired.
It was like, how many times do I answer? Go to the tape.
Yeah, I'm
like,
tired.
Like I've said this before.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I know they've done countless Q&As and intros. I know he's got to be sick about talking about and answering the same questions.
Right. Yeah, but it's a race. It's a race now.
Boy.
All right.
All right, let's get into our main review.
And now, the moment you've been waiting for. The Film Blurbs. Feature film review.
What are we starting with?
We're going to start with the third and final episode of Aquaman, King of Atlantis.
All right. Look, I still do not fuck with this show, but it is a nice closer.
It's hilarious. I still love this shit.
Right. Like, it's the animation, the humor, it doesn't hit me, but it as a whole, it closes out nicely, and like Aquaman finally gets the respect that he's been clamoring for.
Season 2.
That's all you, son. That's all you, son. Like, so I did find some of it funny, but it's just so much. It's my attention span is a little longer than the target audience, and so like there's rapid fire weirdness and animation shifts. I wasn't feeling it.
I loved it. I hope they get weirder, make it more weirder, more surreal. Get fucking crazy.
You want to get crazy? You want to get loco ese?
Yeah, I want this shit to send me to a mental institution after the next season.
Well, no, they can't, because Venom 3 is supposed to send you to the mental institution.
One of them got to. One of these series. Get crazy. Everything needs to get crazier.
It's crazy time. Let's get weird. Like, we talked about this last week. We don't have enough weird for weird's sake anymore.
That's why I love Dune so much, because a lot of that shit's just weird and it doesn't care. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's just like, here it is. We're going to keep going.
Right. It's the Rock's nuts on Vin Diesel's forehead. No fucks given.
All right. Let's move into the French Dispatch. I'll let you take the lead, because I got nothing to say really on this.
All right. So the French Dispatch, if you don't know, is the latest creation by one Wes Anderson. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed this movie, but it is a marathon. It is like every Wes Anderson film is like Wes Anderson daring himself to do the most Wes Anderson film can.
Because this is the most Wes Anderson film ever.
Right. Like, and God bless him for, you know, being able to like get money to make his art projects. Because it's whimsical, it's wonderful, it's everything that you want out of a Wes Anderson film. It's just exhausting.
Yeah, and you know what, man? We were both pretty tired that day. So, right. Like, it's just the combination of us being older and just tired that you like, nodded off one part and then I nodded off.
It's like we took shifts.
Yeah.
Napping. I saw him nap first, right?
It was during the Timothy Chalamet one.
You fell asleep during Timothy Chalamet. I fell asleep during Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah.
Right.
And the Timothy Chalamet one, like, I saw most of the beginning of that before I nodded off. I came in. Like, I missed a good portion of the middle, but I got most of it. And even that storyline, I was like, sure. Like, a lot of these storylines, the only one I fuck with was the prison one with Benicio Del Toro. Right. Like, the rest of them, I'm just like, sure. Like, I would love the Jeffrey Wright one if it was, like, 5 or 10 minutes shorter.
Well, here's the thing. All right, so let me give we got to explain The French Dispatch, the most Wes Anderson film ever.
It's like an anthology.
It's an anthology. Like
it's made Anderson, like a newspaper.
Right. So it's the different sections of the newspaper all around the final issue of the French Dispatch, and they go in and they describe the history of the French Dispatch in such wonderful and whimsical fashion. So there's three, well, five vignettes, but really, like, there's three main ones. Or is there four? Do we count the bicycle one?
No, that's an intro.
Intro. All right. So there is the arts and culture piece about an artist played by Benicio del Toro, who is the greatest living artist ever, but he's also insane and he's in a French prison
for murder.
For murder. And it's a, I don't want to give anything away, but like, it's whimsical, it's weird, and it's cool. I love this one.
Yeah, that was the best one.
Right. Then there's the second one, which would be Politics, which is Timothy Chalamet and
Frances McDormand
about a student uprising.
Right.
And then there's the third one, which is Food, which is about a prison or a police chef.
Yeah.
Like, it's the chef for the
police commissioner.
Yeah. That ends up being a kidnapping drama, well, yeah. Not drama, but like a caper,
yeah.
Starring Ed Norton
and Jeffrey Wright. Jeffrey Wright's the main writer for this piece because everyone follows a different writer.
So the
who
first,
was writing Benicio del Toro?
That was I her name is I know. Oh my God. The Sorcerer Supreme.
Tilda Swinton. She was writing that. Okay. I missed that.
Yeah, because she was doing the lecture.
Oh, yeah.
It was her lecture. There's a lot going on in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. And it's, like I said, it's whimsical, it's fun, it's funny, it's cute, it's beautiful. It's just a lot. Like, even the visuals, like the first 10 minutes when we're doing the bike ride, With Owen Wilson, it's like there's so much going on screen that it's like, oh, the whole time movie's like this, my eyes are gonna bleed.
It's visually inventive, but also pondering because there's parts of it where I'm just like, bro, you could have cut this whole 5 minutes out of here.
Right.
Like, it's an hour and 49 minutes.
And it seems like 3 hours.
Yes, it could have been easily like an hour and a half because right. It's like there's parts. There, even in my favorite part of the movie, which is Benicio del Toro,
right.
There's still parts of it where I'm just like, why the fuck is this so long, man?
Like, honestly, each one of these vignettes could have been its own movie.
Yeah.
You know, and they felt like they each felt like they were fucking 2 hours long.
And once one ended, I was like, oh, cool, let's get to the next one. And then after a while, like once we got to the Jeffrey Wright one, I was just like, all right. Like once it got to the car chase, like right. The animated car chase pulled me in again.
Right.
But before that, when it got to the gunfight and shit like that, I'm just like, you know what, man? I'm kind of ready for this movie to be over.
Yeah.
Like, I want to go home.
Yeah. It's, but like, it's not bad.
No.
I enjoyed it. It's good. Yeah.
It's okay.
I will watch it one more time just to get the parts that I fell asleep during because I was so exhausted.
Yeah. We're tired, man. And like, like we're older.
Right. But like, it is the most Wes Anderson film that has ever been, and I can't wait for the next most Wes Anderson film. I want him to get back to Rushmore.
I
want him to get like the old whimsical but still grounded type shit.
See, my favorite is Grand Budapest Hotel and Moonrise Kingdom.
I mean, Moonrise Kingdom, but The Life Aquatic with Steve Zazu. That's my favorite,
and I really like. Not as much as the other two, but I really like Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I mean, I don't even consider Fantastic Mr. Fox part of that oeuvre because it's animation. Like
Stop motion.
Stop motion. You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels...
But it's in his style.
Right. It's in his style.
And it looks like a Wes Anderson film.
And his Wes Anderson-ness is so apt for that medium that I think that is one of the greatest... technically it's a children's movie.
children are gonna get bored or fall asleep.
Right, but it is the greatest children's like to me it's one of my favorite children's movie kids movies ever.
It's like Hugo. Like you could take like I've seen people take kids to see Hugo, but that's really for adults.
Right.
Beautiful. That's like one of the few movies I'd say see in 3D, because that's Scorsese doing 3D.
Right, right. So like I don't even count that towards his
over
because it's so different but still the same, but it fits into his style. So like he was born to make Fantastic Mr. Fox. Like everything he had done up until then was so he could make Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Well, fuck, now I gotta rewatch that, and it's 50% off Criterion, so I might as well buy that this month.
Get it. I haven't seen Isle of Dog yet though.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I love dogs. Yeah,
French Dispatch is better than Isle of Dogs.
Okay, all right, there you go.
But I would like to give a nice clap to Lea Seydoux. I want to give a clap because the reason why she says she does nudity in film is because she's already uncomfortable acting. So she's like, acting is being naked. So I'm like, what's there another layer? She's like, I'm already uncomfortable. I might as well just be uncomfortable.
And I hate to objectify anybody. But she is a beautiful naked.
I want to give a clap for all the ladies in the entertainment industry right now, because y'all are snapping that back. Like Halsey had a kid and she looks fantastic. Like she looks better. Like she like all y'all white girls going out having kids and coming back. Y'all come back thicker. Yeah, let me stop myself.
Yeah, see, you about to get real black. Yeah. You about to just like, come here, yum yum.
All right, and I mean this respectfully.
As respectfully as we can. She looked amazing.
Y'all coming back.
Posing naked for Benicio Del Toro's weird artwork.
I would like to say y'all coming back thicker and respectfully juicier, and I salute y'all. Like I've seen a few of you come back and I'm just like, Jesus Christ,
that's that mom bod.
Yeah,
that's
man,
mom bod,
man.
Dad bods was 2019 2021 mom bods.
I mean, if this podcast pops off and then
you trying to get some mom bods?
No, I'm trying to get a girl first, and then we'll have a kid. Might as well pop it out, so that's that way everything gets
knock it out. Yeah,
better.
So we digressed,
and we mean this respectfully.
Really respectfully, yeah. Like as respectfully as two perverts can be.
Shout out. Yeah, but Lea Seydoux is just a great actress in general.
Yeah, no, she was like,
she killed it in No Time to Die. I mean, that was real tears and snot coming out of her face. Like that was
not stunt snot. That was real.
That's Viola Davis. Like I'm winning an Oscar snot.
Oh, do we want to talk about our gifts?
Sure. So, remember how we talked about in our No Time to Die review how we loved those sweaters that James Bond one wore at the end of it? Well, we got one.
Yeah, we each got one. So shout out to ASC and shout out to New Pod City.
Yeah.
Frank Sasso.
Yeah, shout out to everybody. I got.
Yeah,
I'm going to frame it. I'm not going to wear it.
I'm going to wear one. I'm going to pose with some guns.
Oh, yeah. I should take a picture in and just get it off. I mean, I'm always posting. Well, not because I'm not trying to make that public and hot.
I'm gonna pose with it with some guns, and then I think that might be a frameable. Anything else on the French Dispatch? Anything you want to say? Anything like that
popped out? Who was that other girl who was with Timothée Chalamet?
Yeah, she was amazing.
She was a great actress, and I was like, damn, Wes Anderson is just showing everybody's nipples in this movie.
I think this is the most nudity that's ever been in a Wes Anderson film,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. We came very close to having Saoirse Ronan naked in this, and I'm just like, Jesus Christ, man.
And she was the grammar person, right? She was a...
She was the prostitute who kept
that's
the kid.
Right, that she was the prostitute. See, there's a lot going on.
And Tony Revioli was in it too.
Tony Revioli, that's right.
I was just like, dude, it's cameo galore. Like everybody and their mom is in this fucking movie.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you talk a little bit more. Okay, yeah. All right, so I found who played Juliet. Lena Kudari.
Yeah.
What has she been in? I think this is her first English. I think this is her first English language film.
Well, I hope it's not the last.
You know, she was wonderful. She killed it.
Yeah, like you're a fantastic actress. You know what I mean?
Like Wes Anderson knows how to make you fall in love with his lead actresses.
Yeah.
Like in all of his movies, like he knows how to shoot women, but he also knows how to direct women for men, if that makes sense. You know, because like you fall in love with her, you fall in love with Leah. There's no real female lead in the third one, is there, besides the wife?
But barely there.
Right, right. But like, if you even go back to the Royal Tannenbaums, you go back to Rushmore, like you fall in love with his female leads.
Yeah. So now that you've done nudity, don't do it again. Because I agree with Margot Robbie. You come out, you show them what you got first, and then you move on. You said you already seen it. Never again.
And there's no, like, if the role doesn't call for it, like it, here, it works because like it really does move the narrative.
Right, right, right.
Right. Like I know saying nudity moves the narrative, but like in the case of the you know the first two vignettes in the French Dispatch, it really does. You know,
especially with Benicio, like that was predicated because they have a whole relationship.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you do it once, get it out of the way.
And then never again.
Unless they pay, unless they give you $1 million like they gave Halle Berry.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a waste, which is so dumb. I mean, I was watching Swordfish the other day. That was a fucking dumb movie.
Yeah, that movie sucks. That movie sucks hard.
This is a Matrix ripoff bullshit.
Fucking shit makes no sense whatsoever.
It's fucking dumb.
Oh. Anyways, let's get into our final review for Eternals, and I guess I'll start off by saying out of the three, it shouldn't be a surprise that this is the best out of the three Marvel films released this year, but it is. And even then, it is a Chloe Zhao movie fighting with a Marvel movie.
Yeah, it is. My whole entire review was it's fine. It's a fine movie. It's okay. I did not hate it like I hated Shang-Chi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't as disappointed in it as I was in Black Widow.
Or disconnected from it.
Right, right. It's fine. But like you said, it is a Chloe Zhao movie trying very desperately to fight against the Marvel machine.
It's crazy to me how this got 46% on Rotten Tomatoes and Shang-Chi has 90%.
Right, because I will. All the complaints for Eternals is that it's got too much character development. It's got too much backstory. I don't think that is a deficit for this movie. I honestly think this movie would have been better as a TV show.
And that's what I like about this movie is that unlike Black Widow and especially Shang-Chi, where Shang-Chi, I was just the whole time, I'm just like,
it's like, who's this motherfucker
and
again?
And why should I care?
Why do I care? Yeah.
This, they get you to care about the Eternals, right? They make them, they're basically demigods and they're asking you to care about the moral and philosophical choices that demigods are making. And they literally confront God and now have to question their place in the literal universe. Like, where do we fit in and what is our next step?
Like, it asks some really, really complex questions, like questions that comic books have been asking since comic books were created.
Yeah, yeah.
But we rarely get in these movies. That being said, it doesn't have an end.
I think that's the thing that hurts this movie the most is that those last 5 minutes, that should have been the start of the second movie and not the end of a first movie. Dune, it's a whole fucking book, and that story's so dense and so complex that it needed to be to do it justice. It had to be two movies. This is just the introductory to the Eternal, so I don't know why. Listen, the ending goes with my problem with Marvel in general, which is you can't tell a complete story now, and it's getting on my nerves.
Right.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier told a complete story. Like, let's take out that post-credit scene with Sharon, right, and take out the Allegro De Fontaine. Like you take that shit out. It has a beginning, middle, and end.
Right. And honestly, Falcon and Winter Soldier, that should have been this movie. It should have been a movie, and the Eternals should have been the TV show.
And I will say this, Loki falls into the same trap of setting up what comes next and not being an ending, but it was so much more rewarding and right, emotionally satisfying.
But also, like, it's TV. It's supposed to be serial.
Right.
Like, the one thing that the first three phases got right with this is, no matter, it doesn't matter if they were all built to a bigger story, each movie was self-contained.
Right.
It had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And right, it was a definitive end. If they never made another movie, this movie ended and you knew where it stood.
Right. Even, I would say, even what's crazy is, even Guardians of the Galaxy 2 has a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
Thor the Dark World ends on that cliffhanger with Loki.
But it's like, it's not really a cliffhanger because he's the god of mischief. He's always gonna fake his fucking death.
But even Thor Ragnarok had a beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
The first Thor had a beginning, middle, and end. All the Iron Man movies, even the mess that is Iron Man 2, has a beginning, middle, and end. It's not till you get to the post credits where you set the shit up. And that's the problem, is this ending is some shit that you should have saved for the post credits or just right, saved for the fucking second movie. So let's get into spoilers now.
Right, we'll get into spoilers, but just one more thing.
Sure.
Like, all of these other, all of Phase 1, 2, and 3 movies, it felt,
they had some weight to them.
Weight to them, and you were watching them because you loved the characters and you loved the movies, right? Here, Phase 4, I'm watching them to watch the next one. Like, it's all fucking set up.
I like the Eternals. I like the character I'm most invested in is Cersei, obviously, because she's the main character. Right. Mm-hmm. She's the most sympathetic one.
Honestly, I really like Thena.
Well, yeah, because she's going through some shit. Right. Like, we'll get to that in the spoilers. But, like, and I love Gilgamesh, too.
Yo, Gilgamesh was my favorite motherfucker
get into that spoilers, too. I think we'll get into spoilers for the characters.
All right.
We'll save that. But, like, yeah, man, at least I was invested in the story, just not only because, like I said, the philosophical and moral choice, but because there's some fucking character development. Right. Like, this is the first Marvel thing besides Loki and Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Those are shows.
Right.
But this is the first Marvel movie that this year to have some fucking sort of character development and ask you to care and actually right, tries to get you to care.
Right. And when the heel turn happens, even though it was obvious, you still kind of felt it because, like, come on, man.
Yeah. And we'll get into why in spoilers. So let's get into spoilers. Right. Let's start with the ending.
Which one?
Let's start with the mid-credit sequence, because the mid-credit sequence is literally the end of the fucking movie. I don't like how they're just pandering to the nerdiest of nerds now, right, because yeah, I remember people got to see it early and they're like, oh my God, that mid-credit scene is
it'll change the MCU forever.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. You guys won't believe what's going to happen. So near the end of the movie, when Cersei's talking to the Celestial, I forget what the Celestial's name is, but it's the one they're working
with. It doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, it starts with an A.
Right.
His shadow cast a shadow that made him look like Galactus. And, you know, like these Marvel things, they do sometimes roll characters together into one, like
right,
the Mandarin and Fing Fang Foom are basically the Mandarin and right, Shang-Chi. And I was like, is this guy going to be Galactus, the devourer of world? And that would have made sense
right,
because the movie, the Eternals decide they love humanity, flaws and all, that they want humanity to survive, and they kill the Celestial that was supposed to be born of Earth. So I thought this dude was going to turn into Galactus and become the devourer world. So I was waiting for the mid-credits scene. I was like, yeah, Silver Surfer, baby.
Right.
Silver Surfer, because, you know, it's cosmic. We're doing cosmic, weird cosmic shit now. Yeah, Silver Surfer. And who shows up?
Fucking Harry Styles.
As the brother of Thanos, Eros, a.k.a. Star Fox. And, nigga, there's only one Star Fox, and he's from Nintendo.
Right. With my fucking rabbit co-pilot. and that frog nigga.
Yeah.
Like,
yo, fuck, look. Nothing against the character, nothing against Harry Styles, but fuck you. Why am I excited for this? I don't know who he is. And honestly, I don't care.
So, like, nerds, Marvel has now weaponized your deep, dark knowledge of comic books against you. Now they've got you getting hard for eighth tier characters.
Yes, because honestly, if you're getting excited over Eros, please grow up. Because like when he showed up, I was just like, who? I felt like Diamond Hansu from the first Guardians. Who? Like,
Star-Lord.
Who? It's me. It's Eros, man. Who? I was just like, and the whole scene was just goofy because Patton Oswalt is the shittiest CG
troll. Like,
he was, that dude was a leprechaun.
Like, what pact with the devil did Patton Oswalt make to be the voice of everything ever, forever?
This is his third Marvel property because he was in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show.
Right.
He's the voice of MODOK, which I don't even know if that got renewed or canceled.
I hope not. I couldn't get past the first episode.
Yeah, it got worse as it went on.
Oh, it got worse?
Yes, yeah, so I watched the whole thing.
Well, that ain't a good look.
Hitmonkey comes out this week.
Oh, okay. So he's in Hitmonkey?
I don't know, but I mean, that's the last thing that was greenlit by Marvel TV before they broke that shit up.
Right. Well,
cool. On Hulu. But yeah, I don't know. And now he's the voice of this CG abomination. Like, I haven't seen CG that bad in a long fucking time, dude.
It's not quite the Scorpion King bad.
Yeah.
But it ain't... like, I spent $150 million on this movie, good.
It's 2021. Y'all had a budget of $200 million. Like, there's no excuse at this point.
Right.
Like, Dune cost $165 million. And that CG in that movie is fucking seamless. And this is what I'm saying. That movie ruined me. Because now I'm just like, oh, we could have a movie that's doing new stuff on a big budget, has epic action, epic scale, does character work, and isn't afraid to be weird. And is artfully shot. It's shot like an art movie.
Right. And that, you know, that's another thing that disappointed me about this movie. Because that was one of the main gets for me. It was supposed to be like the most beautiful, elegant Marvel movie. And yes, it had some great visuals. It looked good, but it wasn't like jaw-droppingly beautiful.
This is the best looking Marvel film just because all those shots, whenever they're outside or like on the beach or like even during on the front porch, the dust shots, though, you could tell that's natural lighting and not the Zack Snyder shit where you can't see it.
But not with the fucking Russian lenses that were open wide up.
You could tell they were using bounce boards.
Right.
And shit like that. But that was natural lighting. It was beautiful. I was like, that's when the movie shines, is when Chloe Zhao is doing Chloe Zhao. Because clearly the conflict of the movie, where it is the moral and philosophical stuff, that is all Chloe Zhao. And then once you get to the superheroics and all the shit that Marvel wanted, you could just feel that just creeping in there and holding it back from what it needs to be.
And the deviants didn't feel like that big a threat.
See, the thing is, I'm glad I didn't watch that second trailer because everybody's like, the deviants suck. When they first came on screen, I was like, it works for me. I don't care because guess what? I didn't watch that trailer. I had no expectations.
Right. But no, like, I didn't, like, I knew nothing about the Eternals going in. So this is, but like, yeah, it, I don't, because they had bigger stakes.
Right.
The deviants didn't seem like all of that, like...
Much of a threat,
yeah.
I guess that's what plays into the twist, too, is that kind of takes the weightlessness from the twist, is that the deviants were...
Yeah, the story is... like, if this were a TV show, if I were watching this over 8 hours and I had time to, like, see all of the Eternals' backstories and see, like, the deviants' sort of growth... I would have been more invested. Like, not that I wasn't invested, but like...
No, I get what you're saying. It's a lot for 2.5 hours.
Right, because you're trying to put 7,000 years worth of backstory.
It's literally the birth of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right. You know, into 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
So let's get into the characters. Like, I want to start with Gilgamesh because he's awesome. Like, yo, this dude, he has like basically cosmic punching gloves. That's what his powers is. He bitch slapped a deviant. And that was in the first 5 minutes. I was like, oh, man.
So like, and like, I would love this act. Like, I can't pronounce his name. Ma Dong Seok. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And if you saw, Train to Busan.
Like, oh yeah, he was great in that fucking shit.
And he killed it here. Like, for a dude who's like whole entire power is just punching motherfuckers real hard. Yo, he had heart, and his relationship with Thena,
played by Angelina Jolie,
was perfect. I haven't seen Angelina Jolie act like this. Yeah. In a minute, she put her foot in it.
Like, she looked like she, like,
she looked fucking shell-shocked.
And she looked like she gave a fuck, which is crazy. For a supporting role, because this is a supporting role for her.
And honestly, like, having Angelina Jolie and Selma Hayek in the same movie together sharing, I just wanted to be on set, and I just want both of them to hug me at the same time. Nothing sexual. I just want them to hold me and protect me.
That was one of the best scenes of the movie, is where, what's her face? Salma Hayek, Ajak.
Right.
She's the leader of the Eternals, goes up to her and tries to heal her. And you just see like all the pain and the hurt. And she's like really trying to save her friend.
Right. And this is a Marvel movie. Like, this shit's not in Marvel movies.
Yeah, man. It shines. Like, all the character stuff is what shines. And I would say, like, Icarus, I love the character of Icarus. It's what Cyclops should have been for 20 years. Like, and you know what? The reason why it's hard for me to hate this movie is because I'm like, seeing Icarus fly around and shoot lasers out his eyes, that shit was cool as fuck. Yeah. Like, it's hard for me to be angry at this movie because I was like, at least this movie has cool shit and it tries, first and foremost.
Right, and like, the superheroics are fucking amazing.
Yes.
You know, it's like, it's... I don't know what the term is. It's lesser than the sum of its parts.
Yes. And I applaud the diversity because it wasn't shoved down our throats. If everything was just natural and they didn't make a big deal about it.
Right. The fact that
there's a deaf one.
Phaedos.
Phaedos
is gay. Right.
And they don't make a big deal about that. There's Marvel has its first sex scene. And I'm surprised Disney said, oh, this is fine, perfect, fine. The sex scene, it's very tender, very romantic. It made me feel warm inside where I'm like, oh, this is sweet.
Right.
But it actually had, like, thrusting. Like, you see Richard Madden thrusting into Gemma Chan. I'm like,
yeah.
And I'm just like,
yeah.
My thing is, besides it, two things I was thinking. One, it was romantic, tender, making me feel good. My second thing is, how did Marvel get this into a PG-13? Because I've seen PG-13 movies do less and get a rated R.
Right. I don't know. Like, the whole entire thing, like I said, it's lesser than the sum of its parts. It's a mess, but it's a beautiful mess.
Yeah. Yeah. It you know, I wish this was the one that came out the gate first. Like, this should have been coming out back in May. We should have got... Then it should have been Black Widow. Then Shang-Chi should have been saved for last. Because then I could have been like, oh, well, at least we got Spider-Man. Now I'm just like, well, we got all these sequels coming up. And I don't know if I'm really, do I care all that much?
Yeah, now, like, it's gone from me being excited for Marvel movies to me being like, all right, like, we're verging on that Star Wars territory.
Yes, yes.
Where I'd like, okay, so you're just going to just throw this shit out at me. Put a Skywalker in it and call it a day. So you're going to mention Thanos and then like, oh, you're going to mention a big bad. We don't even know what a big bad is. You know, like, it's...
Well, let me get to this because I keep forgetting to bring this up. Dane Whitman is in the film, played by Kit Harington. Every time they said his name, every time he's on screen, I perked up because for those of you who aren't familiar, he is a character called Black Knight. They talk about his ebony blade in one scene where he's not there, and he has it in the post-credit scene.
Right.
Black Knight, they had a run from 2015, 2016. Some of the best fucking storylines in comics, like action-packed, characters well done, the philosophical choices he was doing in this. Like, I was like, oh shit, like I was waiting for him to become the Black Knight. And that to me was like, that's the post-credit scene is what I like from Marvel, where it's teasing you, but it's its own thing. Like that scene at the end where the ebony blade, he's about to pick it up. And then you hear that voice say, hey, Dane, are you ready for that? And I guess we should say who that voice is.
Go ahead.
It is Mahershala Ali as Blade. So the fact that we might have Blade training the Black Knight is fucking insane.
Right. Or it could just be more of this Marvel fan service that goes nowhere.
Oh, God damn it.
I mean, I got nothing else. I mean, it's definitely not the worst Marvel movie that's come out in 2021.
Oh, real quick. Let's talk about Druig, because I love Druig.
Okay.
That's Barry Keoghan.
Right.
The dude who can control minds.
Right.
I love that they made him an asshole, but at the same time, you see where he's coming from.
Yeah. Like, the character work is amazing on all fronts. I see everyone's perspective. It's just, I wish we had more time with them.
One last thing.
All right, go ahead.
The editing at the beginning, the editing, and I would even say the structure of the movie for the first like 30, 40 minutes, it didn't flow from scene to scene, and the editing was so choppy. It does that fucking cut, wide shot, close up, wide shot, medium shot, close up. It's the choppiness of it that
it's paint by numbers.
Yeah, that comes out of these studio films that I hate. Nobody knows how to edit anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not the worst. It's fine.
It needed to be a full on Chloe Zhao film, and right. I tell you what, it got me excited to see her cowboy Dracula film.
Yeah. So I mean, you could do worse. You could see worse movies than this, but
it ain't Shang-Chi,
but I don't have Marvel's gotta show me something, man, because like at this point, if the next one fails, I'm just gonna just wait for all this shit to come to Disney Plus.
So which one has to hit for you? Is it Spider-Man or Doctor Strange?
Doctor Strange has to hit for me. It has to, or it's gonna break my fucking heart.
I'll be real with you. Now that we saw this, and it seemed like Chloe Zhao got a lot of creative freedom, I don't think Sam Raimi's gonna be able to hit it out the park. To be quite honest with you,
man, I hope they let Raimi off the chain. Give me 80s Raimi.
Well, I mean, I guess we got Guardians 3 because James Gunn tweeted today that they started shooting today.
Yeah, I mean, and James Gunn we trust. Just let him be the Zack Snyder.
But even then, when he left the Marvel Cinematic Universe, his directing got better. Like, he's doing interesting things with the camera versus the Marvel films where it's just, let's set up this shot.
Time will tell, brother. Time will tell.
We're the Film Blurreds. I'm Brandon Nord, and I'm the motherfucking protagonist.
I'm the protagonist.
I'm Jeff Stewart, a.k.a. He Who Remains.
Don't come at us. It's just fucking movies.
You've been listening to the Film Blurs podcast.
Man, I just love what you guys do, man.
I never miss an episode. It's the best.
It's my favorite podcast.
Follow Jeff on IG on MindfireXL and Brandon on Twitter at BJNTweets.